we are back with episode 811 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and gosh, some non-TV stuff going on today.
Just a little, also some TV stuff, but yes. You know, we'll get into that as time allows. But yes, we are back for another week's worth of shows here on The Critical Myth, and man, we are knee-deep in the summer movie schedule here, and we've already got some actual hits on our hands. I'm rather impressed and rather pleased. Also, I've been catching up on a couple other movies and maybe some TV shows. Later this week, we're going to be kind of previewing the fall TV season, at least what the networks are putting out. There are a few surprises as far as I'm concerned. And then, of course, we're going to have our episodic discussion for the shows from the past week or so.
It is a little thin this week. So.
It is a little thin. I think I mentioned it last time that we went from having, 19 shows with 21 episodes, and we are down to, 11 shows with 12 episodes. So, yeah, we dropped almost half of what we had, and believe it or not, that's a pretty steady state right now for the next couple weeks. It may even drop more. It's worth considering that. Yes, so we are going to... go ahead and capture that as best we can later this week. But before we do any of that, we're going to be starting off with how our week has gone. And before we do that, do we need a disclaimer? I guess we should, because we're going to get into a couple discussions here.
Okay. I wasn't sure whether we were going to suspend that for one of our topics, but nevertheless, yes, as we discuss the various new media releases and even news of new releases, we will occasionally delve into what some people would call spoilers, meaning that we'll give away secrets, talk about upcoming events, people that have lived, died, or other plot twists. So if you're not ready, then you might want to put us on pause, catch up, and come back. Otherwise, pull up a chair and give a good listen.
Mm-hmm, that's right. And, we'll see how far we get into spoilers, because I don't know that I want to spoil too much on one of these topics, but, we'll see how it goes. But, first off, Gary, how's your week been, and what's been your highlights here?
It's been a busy week for me work-wise. Personally, I got a few pieces of good news as far as plans coming up for the summer and further on throughout the year, so that's a good thing. I'm looking forward. We're under 90 days to Dragon Con in Atlanta, so always a highlight of my year. Other than that, my children have finished school, so the summer is officially here, as not only our TV schedule shows us, but also in real life. And then I guess a big topic of this discussion here would be that I did go out with the whole family and see Wonder Woman. So that was definitely a highlight of the week. I guess we'll go into that a little bit more in a bit. How are things going on your end? Oh, I haven't picked up any new books yet. It's not for lack of wanting to read. I just have not gotten around to go pull some up. Although my son and I have been fighting over my deluxe edition Planetary comic book that we've decided to go back and reread again. It's for me, I consider it one of the top 10 comic book series that exist. And it's great, and just a real short bit of twist of the story is basically it turns out in this particular universe the Fantastic Four are the villains of the story, and in the process they deconstruct and analyze almost every major pattern in comic book history from the Golden Age through the 1980s into current sensibilities. I don't know of a superhero analog that is not referenced, if not directly, indirectly throughout the whole series. Everyone from Batman to a Shadow to a Superman to Green Lantern to Shazam to just about everyone you could imagine is listed. Even Spider-Man and Captain America variants. This was put out by Wildstorm, which is now owned by DC. At the time, it wasn't when it first started coming out. It only took 10 years for this 27-issue series to come out, but it's always been a favorite of mine, and so we're going back to revisit it. I really feel it's quite an insightful series, and you could take it on face value, but there's just so much running sort of underneath the surface in it as they talk about comic book trends and different ways that heroes are perceived and created and needed for the times that they exist in, that it's quite an interesting story, and there is fighting as well for those who care for that in a comic book.
Yeah, I always liked that one because it was such a subversive type of book in the sense that it took all those tropes and it really turned it on their head without it being a retread of Watchmen, for instance.
It definitely
was its own thing.
So, but yeah, so we're revisiting that right now. I splurged and bought the first edition of the Ultimate, or I forget what phrase or term, but it's basically, you know, the hardcover with the slipcover in it. And I honestly, given the length of time it took for the last 10 issues to ever come out, literally 8.5 years, I never expected to see the second hardbound edition, but they did finish it, complete it, and put it out. So we quite enjoy reading it. There's, as I said, if you're a fan of just about any superhero, they'll be referenced in there at some point for you, and it's a lot of fun. And find my son and I, you know, talking about it. You know, what do you think this was, or you know, why did they show this, and what are they trying to say? For example, there's a Nick Fury analog. What are they trying to say about like society when he's, you know, spouting off certain things that are happening in, you know, at the time and things like that? And it's very thought provoking. So I'm finding it a good read back and forth with my son.
Awesome. That's a pretty good choice, actually, I would think. What have I been up to? Well, it's been a week, less than a week, actually, since our last recording. One of the things that I forgot to mention back last time was that we have gotten much further on our Babylon 5 rewatch.
Oh, what season are you up to?
We are in the third season.
Oh, that's what it's
last time I talked about it, we were back in the first, so we ripped through the second season pretty quick. But definitely spent the time to hit the right beats. But we are now right at the beginning of the third season, so yeah, this one is going to be quite the roller coaster ride. For those who aren't familiar with Babylon 5, number one, shame on you. You should go out and start finding it, since it is on the Go90 app. You can stream all of the episodes.
Oh yeah, we haven't talked about that much, but you know, they also have Fringe on there, which I'm starting to watch with my daughter, and I keep wanting to jump ahead and talk about Folivia and stuff, and I was like, no, gotta wait.
Yes, so. It's amazing how much that show changed over its 5 years too. But yeah, it's we're having a good time with it. It's really kind of fun to go back and see it again after so long, and really see it through fresh eyes as well. It's been so long since I've seen the entire series. So, it's just good to go back and take a look at that. I read a couple stray volumes of manga. One of them was the second volume for a series called Big Order, which was a short-run anime series about a year ago, maybe longer. The manga I had never gotten around to reading because it was never officially translated. Now it is being released here in the U.S., so I'm finally getting to read it, which is fun. Also, I was reading the third omnibus collection of an Evangelion spinoff called the Shinji Ikari Raising Project, which is not like the show at all, but it does have the characters in it, and it's kind of like if they were just in a romantic comedy constantly. So it kind of has its appeals, to say the least. It's definitely a fun read more than it is the angsty read that the one would expect from the anime. But moving on from that, I have started reading Catalyst, which is the prequel to Rogue One. Yes, the novel prequel to the film prequel to the original Star Wars. Whole lot of prequeling going on, which is usually not a word that one wants to hear in relation to Star Wars. But this is the prequel to Rogue One, which, you know, was a very good movie. So I'm already enjoying it. I'm only about 50 pages in. I'm not going to say that I'm like deep into the book. I'm maybe 10% into it. I mean, it's like barely started, but I am enjoying what I'm reading so far. I think it's, you know, it could contend for being roughly on par with Thrawn if it continues at the quality that I'm reading so far. And it's just really kind of fun to get into those details that were introduced in Rogue One. So I'm having a good time with it so far. But it's been a little bit of a busy time. We had just to get into slightly personal things, a graduation this week.
Yes, congratulations. Yeah.
Yes, thank you. So we had I had a little less time than usual for a little bit of free time to watch TV and so forth. But definitely trying to keep up with some things and watch some of these shows as they come out. Did watch a movie. We'll get into the better movie later. I did watch a couple movies that were from earlier in the year or from the holiday season. One was the Lego Batman movie, which I remember you did not really like very much.
Well, it just let me down compared to the first. Well, I don't want to say. I guess to the Lego movie. Yes.
Right. And I think I can understand that. Maybe because my expectations were properly tempered, I enjoyed this on a certain level. But I definitely saw where the seams were showing. It kind of surprised me that it needed that many writers. But, okay, that's fine. That's always something that I look at when there's like a comedy movie or something, or there's a movie where it feels like it's kind of just thrown together in certain respects, because there are a lot of moments that just feel like, yeah, let's be zany here. And then you look and there are like seven or eight writers and you go, oh yeah, that's why. Because they basically just kept layering jokes upon jokes, and it was not necessarily coherent at the end. But that all being said, it's a very simple story, so there wasn't a whole lot of need to go into huge, you know, angsty plot details. They could do that kind of thing, and I think that they hit reasonably well when it came to the jokes. Some of them maybe not so much, but it was fun. It was if you don't go in expecting it to be, you know, as transcendent as the Lego Movie was, but I do have to say, Gary, the only thing that really occurred to me as I was watching it was that the Lego Movie was such a shocking success at the time, right? We heard the Lego Movie and we all just thought, what's this going to possibly be? And then it's surprisingly strong. I wonder if that had something to do with it too, where it was like, okay, the first one really gained a lot of points because it came out of the gate so, you know, surprisingly different than what we were really led to believe it would be. But I'm not sure. I enjoyed it well enough. Let's put it that way. The other movie that I watched was Passengers.
Oh, yeah. There was a negative twist on that when it first came out.
Yeah. And I understand why. Very much so. Have you seen this movie?
No, I have not.
Okay.
I mean,
how spoilery can I get?
Oh, just rip into it, because I've heard enough about it that I could not really be surprised by anything. So.
Okay. So, yeah, spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't seen it, but you've probably heard the controversy. And I have to say, unfortunately, the controversy is well earned. You know, it was pretty much a movie that was advertised as two people are woken up unexpectedly on a long hibernation type of colonization mission, and they need to figure out how to survive, and in the process they fall for each other. That's how it was advertised, right?
Yes.
Okay. Not so much. The guy is accidentally woken up. He winds up, spoiler alert again, people, he winds up intentionally waking her up. And then proceeds to spend a good part, a chunk of the second act, not telling her this. So he's the only guy around. She's the only girl around. They kind of start falling for each other. And then she finds out through questionable plotting that this is the circumstance. Now, that makes it a whole lot more questionable what he did. And the whole idea that she would, like, he basically is not telling her the truth and basically consigned her to this fate of not being able to get to where she was supposed to go for extremely selfish reasons. And then the third act is basically circumstances changing just enough for them to, at the end of the movie, essentially her more or less, without really kind of ever bringing it back up again or discussing it again, kind of deciding to forgive him and everything's okay and they're in love again. And I'm just watching this movie and the entire time I'm going, that's Stockholm Syndrome.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Yes.
In a very big, very blatant way, that's really not at all the romantic movie that they were kind of spinning it as or advertising it as. Basically, it became a very pointed discussion of why this guy's an asshole. we really did not like that guy at all. So, yeah.
Well, thankfully, he had a nice follow-up movie to come back with strong, right?
Yes. One would think. There was one moment where he did a dance-off, so that was funny. Nice reference there. But that's about as close as he was to a principled person as you could get. It was pretty skeevy, I'll put it that way. And I think that it definitely earned the reputation that it had as a really kind of stalkery kind of movie. And yeah, I just can't imagine anybody turning around and being remotely friendly, let alone lovey-dovey with somebody who ruined their life. So, in that blatant a manner. I would not recommend it unless you were just there to watch the pretty space scenery, because the special effects were really good.
Okay, well, there's that then.
there's that. If you can ignore the fact that the story is going to make you want to punch somebody. So, namely Chris Pratt, which... I liked it better when, like, Star-Lord and Katniss are in a movie. Or in space. Yeah. That would have been fine. I would have been okay with that. But, yeah, I don't know where they got off thinking that that was, like, some grand romantic movie. I really don't. Which is, I think, probably what you had already heard. So yes. You're probably not too surprised by that. But, yeah, I kind of was watching it going, okay, you know, maybe it's not as bad as people... Oh, no. It really is just as bad as people said. It might even be worse.
Worse, oh, jeez.
Yeah, well, there was one point where I thought that the big plot twist was going to be that he thought that he did it, and that it was actually the ship malfunctioning that caused it to happen. So it would have been that his intentions were, you know, incredibly questionable, but at the end of the day, he really wasn't responsible. That would have been a lot more interesting. But
why? Well, it still doesn't stop the fact that he was planning to do it and wanted to.
No, but it would have been more, at least... an exploration of, you know, what really... It would have at least explored different ground than where they did. They really just made it the fact that he blatantly did this. And at one point there is, you know, further in the movie, there's a reason for this, but someone does literally call him out on the fact that it's like, you did this on purpose. What the hell is wrong with you? And that's as far as it goes. It really, at some point, just kind of disappears after that. The third act is a complete mess. So... yeah, so I guess you could say I watched two mediocre movies from over the holidays, but I liked the Lego Batman movie a lot more than I did Passengers.
I believe that.
Yes. I'm sure you do. But hey, let's turn our attention to something that is, I think, a nice palate cleanser from that last one I was talking about, and a movie that I think I can't wait until I can finally see it. And a whole lot of people are happy with what they've been seeing, and that would be Wonder Woman. And Gary, you're the one who can talk a little bit about this.
Okay, we are going to slightly modify our usual spoilers, and I will be a little less spoilerific.
Yes.
So, because I realize...
I don't argue too much with that.
Yes, because if you haven't seen it at least twice by now, then what are you waiting for?
Everyone's schedules to clear.
Yes, yeah.
Little graduation thing I mentioned before got in the way.
Fair enough. I want to quote... a part of a quote from an author who's an acquaintance of mine. His name's J.C. Hutchins. As he's talking about the movie, he says, "It's got Snyder's cheerless, desaturated fingerprints all over it, but Wonder Woman is absolutely worth seeing and supporting."
Say that one more time for those in the back.
Oh, yeah, fair enough. It's got Snyder's cheerless, desaturated fingerprints all over it. But Wonder Woman is absolutely worth seeing and supporting. And geez, I've never heard, I guess all my issues with, yep, most of Snyder's movies summed up in less than a sentence. However, that's why Mr. Hutchins is such a good writer, because he can capture it so well. That being said, yes, I felt as if, you know, through this movie, Wonder Woman was fighting against the malaise and the issues that many have had with Batman versus Superman and Man of Steel, and I'm definitely one of those people with issues. So it felt that it was having, without being too allegorical, had to fight and break its way through that mold to try and find itself and move forward. And it did manage to do that. As we've heard about rewrites and stuff that were happening on this, I can definitely see some cracks or fractures where perhaps that original model was there, and they realized that, geez, if we don't want to kill the whole franchise, we have to do something different. And they very much did. It's very enjoyable. Wonder Woman is not a Batman or a Superman in a corset. She is her own defined superhero, very different and distinct than either of those two people, and refreshingly so. It really was a there was a little comedy, could have used just a hair more perhaps. There was sad moments. There was this sense of purpose. There was a whole story arc that you saw to completion. I felt they wrote perfectly. They really didn't leave any dangling ends per se to the story. It opened perhaps a hair cheesy, if not cinematographically beautiful. And it was, I really enjoyed it. The choice, and I don't think this is a real spoiler, to choose to set her in World War One as opposed to World War Two was refreshing. The Great War does not get that much exposure, and to avoid parallels against Captain America, I think we're wise.
That's a really good point, actually. It
allows it to stand on its own and not have so many direct comparisons, as I think if it was set in World War II, it would have invited those much more readily. So I thought it was a great movie. I hope to see it in the theaters at least one more time before it leaves. And from the box office that I've heard, it cracked 100 million domestically in less than a week is phenomenal. And it's been reviewed pretty darn well. And I guess as a guy, it might be hard for me to speak to this, but I will say I felt that it had a much more feminine voice to it than we're typically used to having. When I say that, by no means do I mean that in any pejorative way. It was refreshing to see what I felt was a much different point of view from either the Batman or the Superman movies. I think it's something that's been lacking in the DC universe now for some time. And I was thrilled. Wonder Woman can literally, as I said, be a woman, not just be a female version of a man, which are two different things, in my opinion. And I don't mean that in a sexist way. I mean that in every positive plus way, that, you know, women can be unique and different than men, but by no means less. So I felt it was very well done. Chris Pine really impressed me. He honestly, in a lot of ways, I think played a better Trevor than Kirk, in my opinion. And he was very good in the role. I liked him with a little bit of dirt or gruff, so to speak, as opposed to as clean as Kirk typically is. The supporting cast was varied and imaginative and very inclusive of different nationalities in a way that I really was not expecting it to be. And I enjoyed the strength that brought to the film. Let me go back to the antagonist. Was a bit of a twist towards the end, but by no means was it a cop-out. I think they sort of did put it out there for people who caught it. And I think if I went back a second time to see it, I will probably see some of the clues or indicators much more easily than I did with just the few I caught as watching it the first time. But yeah, it was a surprise. Her origin, they did show a very young Diana, I'll say probably under 10, and even those scenes were not dumbed down, were not made over cutesy or anything like that, as any sort of person who's a parent understands how kids, you know, really function and work. I found it very believable and enjoyable to see the younger Diana. It was very, within as much as we can say, realistic. It was quite enjoyable. And it sort of did a good job of laying the foundations of the, of Themyscira or Paradise Island, if you prefer, in ways that we didn't need like screens of text to detail out to us. It was fed in a very, very calm, smooth way that allowed you to absorb the sort of the history without too much spoon feeding, which was very nice. So we did get her origin story, but honestly, that's what we got. We got a story. We did not actually see, like, from her being shaped by clay, as the comic book goes, you know, all the way through up. We saw one or two little segments, and that was about all we saw, which was fine. I don't need a complete retelling scene by scene of every superhero's origin. Not that they do that necessarily that much with Wonder Woman, but they could have, and they chose not to, and I found it very refreshing that they didn't, and I felt it supported the plot later on, which was even more of a reason not to do it. So tight script. Gal Gadot, people had concerns, and I won't say that they were completely unjustified. However, I felt she did pull through well, and definitely, you know, she's meant to play a foreign woman. She's not meant to play an American. She's not meant to play a European. She's meant to play someone whose culture has been pretty much isolated since, if not the Roman, definitely the Greek times. And they, you know, while they're not ignorant or savages, she has her own set of values and purpose, and she should sort of stand out as unique and different because that's what she is. So, with those caveats, yeah, I felt she did do a very good job. They made what I felt was a more than reasonable effort to justify the costume and the design of it. Okay. So I thought that was also something some people might bring up. I felt they did a good job of doing that as well. And I don't want to be any more spoilerific than I perhaps might have been, but overall, a very good job done. And I really do look forward to the next movie. I've heard it's going to be set in contemporary times, and I can tell, and I'm not hoping ill of it. However, given the social commentary threads that did run through the first movie in varying degrees, to set it in current day is definitely going to magnify the focus on those things. And if they can handle it as well as they did in this first movie, I look forward to it. But I do see it as a challenge moving forward. So I would definitely recommend seeing it. I saw it on an IMAX screen. I don't think a 3D version would have helped this movie at all. The large screen was nice, but again, I don't think you need it. I will say her fighting style was bordered on unique and was thrilling to watch. I don't think that you needed a large screen, though, to do that. So if you want to, anybody wants to save a few dollars and see it on regular screens, I imagine you'll be fine. But yeah, her fighting style was, without giving anything away, was unexpected, unique, and a thrill to watch.
That's good to hear.
Did you have any other non-spoilerific questions I can answer for you?
No, well, I only had a comment at this point, which is that the setting, I really like the fact that they went with World War One, not just for the reason that you gave, but also because I like this idea of highlighting World War One, because it was, I think we're so far removed from it now that people lose the sense of why it is in many respects. People say that it was a far more difficult and disturbing war than World War II. It has its own flavor, I guess you could say. It has its own horrors.
I was actually discussing that with my son on the way out of the movie, and we were talking about it. He's like, really, it was the last great European war. Mm-hmm. You know, as you think of the wars through the 16, 17s, even 1800s, really World War One was sort of that last one, because World War Two was such a different war for so many reasons that, that was the last great European land war.
And land war is probably the way to look at it, right? I mean, it was a transition. In a lot of respects, there was a lot of technology that was introduced for it, but the you know, whole idea of trench warfare, that was its ultimate expression in many respects. And I know you're a history buff, so I'm not telling you anything you don't already know, but it is something that I feel like it's almost overlooked, because World War II has so many easily identifiable enemies, I guess you could say. I mean, you don't see a whole lot of games, for instance, to say, hey, let's have the game set during World War One. It would be intensely depressing.
Well, John, actually, you know, one of my degrees is history, with a specialty in military history, well, and specifically in World War One. Wow, so, hey. So I was, I've stood in the trenches on the Marne. I've been through wipers. I've walked some of these places that you hear the famous battles of. I've even had a chance to interview firsthand veterans, back in the early 90s. And it was, as much as World War II was just such a different thing that you really can't compare the two, even though they're given nomenclatures of one and two. One was vastly different, and in some ways so much more horrible. I mean, you still had broad use of mustard gas, which even in the height of World War II was virtually never used at all. The meat grinder of basically fronts not moving for years was just, it was just horrendous. It really took away so much hope from people. And that's one thing that dovetail back to the movie. As we talked about Snyder's sort of grayness and his lack of sunshine and color and anything else that embroiders any sort of goodness. That's what Wonder Woman's actions does in this movie, is pull through that, there is hope. There is, good can come of this. We have to, stop the evil and the badness so that, good has a chance to flourish again. So that's...
Yeah, I was wondering then, and that's where I was kind of going with it, was whether or not you feel like the setting made... I mean, it sounds like that is the perfect place for Wonder Woman to take place during, versus World War II, where it was more... It, like you said, there were certain aspects of that that made sense for, say, Captain America. But it sounds like this, maybe it thematically makes a lot more sense for this to be when Wonder Woman takes place. And not only that, but then it makes me wonder if, knowing that there were a handful of people who were involved in this particular movie, how many of those ideas were Snyder's ideas and how many were the people who came in to basically rewrite the movie for him. I'd be very interested by that.
It almost feels split. Yeah. As I settled into the original, well, I guess the original drabness of color, the hopelessness and sort of sense that, you know, nothing can be saved or is good. I sort of gritted myself, and I was pleasantly surprised and relieved when when hope and optimism and color came back into the world, to the DC universe. And so I have much higher hopes for Justice League, having seen Wonder Woman, if they took some of those lessons that they obviously applied to Wonder Woman and carried them forward.
Well, who knows? Maybe one of those drastic rewrites that we've heard about for Justice League may have been along those lines. And something tells me that if they weren't after this, maybe there will be further tweaking done.
That's true. They were doing reshoots as recently as a month ago. So.
They were. So it wouldn't surprise me. Unfortunately, that may be a situation where it's, you know, I know a lot of people who are thinking we're going to have this amazing epiphany with Wonder Woman where it seems like finally DC is getting back on track, only to have everything just dashed when Justice League comes and is a complete mess. But I think that the retooling behind the scenes for Wonder Woman was far less invasive and extensive than what we've heard about for Justice League. So this may be the first one where they were pretty close to what they wanted to do and then just had to make certain tweaks, who knows. But or they could have been able to do most of those changes at the script level before they actually were putting things to film. It's really hard because the kind of information that you get, because there is such negativity, is kind of shaded by that. Not only the fact that we mostly hear the worst possible interpretation of everything coming out of the DC movie universe, but also because there's very many people who are tight-lipped because they don't want to feed into that. So, yeah. Who knows? We'll see relatively soon what Justice League is going to look like. But I'm happy to hear all these people that are raving about Wonder Woman. Just the fact that this is a blatantly female-led and fronted film, and people basically said that it was going to flop for that reason alone, and for it to come out of the gate and basically just trounce everything is just wondrous to behold. No pun intended.
Well, you know, that, and there is hope, you know, of course, as being a, I certainly lean more towards the DC comic universe. Mm-hmm. I kept hoping there would be something good at some point, please. And now we finally do have something. And we are also, I don't know if we had mentioned, I think we did mention it last week that, no, maybe we didn't, that that Joss Whedon is taking over on Justice League.
Yes, but from what I understood, he is basically locking down the final edit more than anything. Because it is so close to being done. However, if there are reshoots that are being done, it's just so far into the process, I can't imagine that his fingers are going to really be able to do much here in terms of him going in and kind of making vast changes to quote-unquote fix Snyder and his one-note storytelling, which, yeah, problematic. Which, of course, the kind of irony of that is that of all people, Joss Whedon is put in there, and all the people who are kind of a negative bent for Joss Whedon are going to, if Justice League is a mess, basically turn it around and say that it's his fault because they're looking for reasons to say things about him. So, yeah, that's just unfortunate. But, you know, everybody's got their preferences. What can you say? I'm just going to say that it sounds like I really need to gather the troops and go see this movie very soon. Hopefully between now and the convention schedule for next weekend, we can find time to do it. All right, well, we're actually going to go ahead and wrap this one up here, and what we'll do is we'll take our TV talk and our discussion of the fall TV season into next time. So, until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review. So let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.